everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, off and running here on Thursday, July 24th, 2025. Tom Fairbanks, my friend, engineering and producing the show. Tom, a little bit of interesting history. 80 years ago today, then President Truman hinted through an interpreter to Soviet Premier Joseph Stalin that the United States had successfully developed a new weapon. And reportedly, Stalin did not appear to be impressed by this news. But
was this at the Yalta conference by any chance?
Could have been. But
he and Churchill and Stalin were all getting together to divide up the spoils of the European continent.
We all know what happened, right? 2 weeks later, the world knew what that weapon was all about. But anyway, that was 80 years ago today. It is the Buckmaster Show, and the Green Thing is Zocalo Village Studio. They have the naming rights, and I'm glad they do during our hour here, Monday through Friday, in the Bustos Media Center. Five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted live news and talk. We're in our coming up on our 15th year, 14 and a half years for sure, of our radio program, and pushing almost 38 full years in the Tucson radio and TV market, and a bunch of years before that, other places. Have our worldwide live listening. You can listen to our program live during the noon hour at buckmastershow.com. And of course, our telephone interviews from the live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We welcome now to the show Dr. Ravi Shah. Dr. Shah is the medical director at the Pima County Board, the Pima County Jail. He's one of five people on the TUSD governing board. In fact, Dr. Shah is the clerk of the board, and he is the proud parent of three young children, all enrolled in the TUSD school system. Dr. Shah, good to see you.
Bill, thank you for having me back. Excited to be here.
Can't believe it. Week from Monday, school begins at Tucson Unified. How would you characterize the start of this school year? It's certainly a year that will start off with some major challenges.
Well, we're excited to have a few more days of summer with my family and my kids home, and we're excited to get back to school for another school year. My oldest will be an eighth grader, last year in middle school, and my twins will be in second grade. So excited for all the they'll be learning and all their growth and development this upcoming school year, as I'm sure the 40,000 parents of our TUSD students throughout our district will be as well in the coming year and a half. And yeah, there are some major challenges, a lot of uncertainties and unknowns in terms of funding that we're having, especially from the federal government, that we'll have to figure out how to manage over these next couple of weeks and months.
Will the board have to redo the budget?
We won't have to redo the budget. So a lot of that is focused on state and a budget, which is set now. So the state just passed our budget, I think, right last minute on June 30th. And so we were able to pass our budget inclusive of the state funding that came from the budget. So that's all set. And we'll have to see what programs we're able to continue and what we might have to let go of this year because of federal changes.
Loss of about $6 million at Tucson Unified from these federal funds. What kind of areas was that money going to support, Dr. Shah?
So they reversed some of that, Bill. So $2 million for the 21st Century Program, which is going to be for after-school programs and other services for our families, was restored. So we're looking at more about $4 million, which is still very significant, of course. And we're talking about professional development programs for teachers. So teachers, especially those working with English language learners, some of our most challenging high needs students, those who don't speak English and are learning English, whether they're immigrants here, refugees, or others that are coming to our country, we're losing some professional development, some training and support and resources for our teachers and students, especially those who are English language learners. And that's going to be really challenging as we work as a district to make sure that those students that are most vulnerable are getting the services and getting the education they need to be successful here in our great country and our great town here of Tucson.
So when you look at the federal money, is it a chunk of the budget or a small chunk? How would you characterize out of your spending plan that you're operating under for this current fiscal year?
Well, I mean, depends on your perspective. You know, I would say it's a small chunk, but we don't have a lot of room to make up for some of it. And so unfortunately, you know, as we lose funding, we'll have to make some really important decisions on what programs we find other sources of funding for, and if there aren't any other sources of funding, you know, whether we continue to use maintenance and operations funding to sustain these programs or whether we have to let go of some of these programs.
How many students are we talking about in your portfolio right now, and how many schools?
Oh, we have 40,000 students each year, and 88 schools are on our district, including elementary, our K-5. We have our new K-6 schools that have incorporated sixth grade, and I think is our second year now with that new program, our middle schools and our high schools throughout TUSD.
Over the years, thousands have left TUSD. Why do they leave?
Part of it is going to be, you know, just the competition out there. We know the vouchers are taking a significant number of our students. I have some data here, so I make sure the number's right.
Please
we have
do.
Over 3,000 students within our TUSD boundaries getting vouchers. Most of those students, however, never attended a TUSD school to begin with, but about 15% have. And so we're losing as much as $37 million of potential funding from the state because of the voucher program and the students that aren't attending TUSD within our borders and are using vouchers. We have the charter schools and growth in the charter school programs, but there's also demographic changes. We know that especially in a lot of regions within TUSD, we are seeing just less kids in general, less births, less kids, older families, as opposed to the younger, newer families moving into a lot of our TUSD regions. And so back a couple months ago, we did have folks come in and talk about demographic analysis and what we can expect in terms of just families and movement and the future in terms of the number of kids that exist within our TUSD regions. And our hope is to capture as many of those and make sure that TUSD is the first choice for, you know, as many families as possible, like it is for our family.
Could you share a little bit of that information about some of the demographic shifts that are going on? What regions of the district are finding the growth and others are really lagging behind?
We know that Midtown Tucson, some of the east side neighborhoods are getting older and seeing older families. Their kids have graduated from high school and are in college and in the workforce. A lot of them are no longer having young school-aged children from K to 12 within our region. We're seeing some growth in the southwest part of Tucson, and you know we know there's some areas that are going to see some new development over the years ahead, and we're trying to figure out how to make use and take advantage of some of the growth areas as well. And so I think we're having a lot of conversations as a district on the future of our district and how we can meet the needs of our families, make sure we're the first choice for families within our boundaries, bring families from outside our district that want to utilize some of our specialized resources and services that we have and our programs that we have, and then grow where the population is growing.
You and I are both products of public education in Chicagoland, and we both believe in it. I believe in public education, and I know you do as well. Is there something with this voucher, and I know Arizona was kind of the leader in the whole school voucher movement, but when you look at an area where we grew up and where you grew up, you know, we both going to the public schools, is there something about Arizona that people seem maybe not to trust public education as much as other areas? Have you thought about that?
No, I haven't seen the data around the country. No, this is an issue not just in Arizona, but it's something that school districts around the country are facing in terms of the charter school movement, in terms of vouchers and other things. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that a supermajority of families that are getting vouchers have never attended a TUSC school. So I heard the last number was 85%. So most of this voucher money isn't going to give choice to families to leave public education and try something different, whether at home or private schools. Most of this money is going to families that never selected public schools and have already chosen private schools or homeschooling. And so this isn't really giving families a choice. This is just subsidizing the cost for families who never elected to send their kids to public schools.
A perception has been public schools at Tucson Unified perhaps have been lagging behind, but you've got some very schools that are excelling, don't you, in the district?
Well, I think there's a lot of
letter grade wise,
it's been going up.
Perception lingers,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
But our district is a B-rated district overall. Mm-hmm. Over half of our, 80% of our schools are A, B, and C-rated. We only have a handful of schools that are D and OF schools right now. And so we've done a lot over the last couple of years to really focus in on growth and development, which is where the letter grades are mainly being calculated from. And I think our teachers have done amazing work. Our families have done amazing work engaging with our schools. And most of our schools are A and B rated throughout our district. Over half of our schools are A and B rated. And so I'd love for families to take another look, explore their local public school, whether it's TUSD or wherever they live in their listening area, and take a look and see what programs and services. We are offering programs and services that you're not going to be able to find in private schools and charter schools because of the number of students we have. The sports programs, the music and arts, we expanded that significantly over the last couple of years. And that's really one of my daughter's favorite part about school is the music program that she has at her middle school. And so I'd love for families to take another look and give us a chance. I think we're doing amazing work in the districts. You have four TUSD parents on the school board, four out of five of us. And this is a first choice for all four of our families. And we encourage that to be the first choice for all Tucson area families.
All right. We'll continue in segment number two with Dr. Ravi Shaw. Dr. Shaw is the board clerk of the five-member Tucson Unified Governing Board. And I should point out this is a job that does not have financial reimbursement, correct?
Correct. I get a chickpea salad most evenings when we have board meetings.
There you go. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll take a break right here. By the way, coming up tomorrow, Laura Conover will be our Friday Focus interview, the Pima County attorney, back after this.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Dr. Ravi Shaw is here. Dr. Shaw is the clerk of the board. There are five members on the TUSD governing board. Four of the five are parents, and Dr. Shaw is one of them. And he has three young children that are enrolled in TUSD. The override and the bond, when those two particular instruments, financial instruments, Dr. Shaw, people get confused, don't they?
No, and I didn't know what the difference was before a few years ago myself, so I don't blame anybody for being confused.
Tell our listeners the difference and what's going on and how it affects your district.
Sure. 2 years ago, and thank you, listeners, for your vote in favor of our bond, but 2 years ago we passed a bond, which means money coming into our district that could be used for infrastructure and facilities. We can't use it for salaries. We can't use it for positions. We can't use it for programs. That could be used for facilities and infrastructure. Over the last year and a half, we've used that money to fund a lot of not cosmetic things, but things behind the scenes. We've updated HVAC systems around the district. We have updated plumbing and facilities around the district, which we don't see on a daily basis, but have been really important to make sure our schools are functioning.
A state-of-the-art security system.
We have updated our security system
which is
to help
huge.
Keep our kids
and maybe
safe.
It may be the most important thing to a parent.
Absolutely. Yeah. Safety and security is definitely important, and we've done some good work over the district to make sure we're using the bond money for safety and security as well. We've gotten new buses. We're going to do some more cosmetic things in the years ahead. We're going to be updating some of the fields, sports fields in a couple of high schools, as well as look at other facility updates now that we've taken care of some of the must-need, high-needs projects behind the scenes. Now, override is very different. So our board is now asking the voters to approve an override, which is an override of our maintenance and operations budget. This is a budget that we can use for teacher salaries, for programs and services that directly affect the 40,000 students throughout our district. We know that our state budget hasn't really increased. It has not kept up with inflation. So we've gotten, you know, in real terms, a state cut in their school funding over the last couple of years. And we also lost $270 million of federal COVID relief money last year. And so what we're hoping to do with the override, if approved by the voters this November, is to first and foremost support teachers and their salaries. Every other school district in the Tucson area has an override that's voter approved. And a lot of that's going towards teacher salaries and benefits. And so to stay competitive, to make sure we can compete not just with the other school districts in the Tucson area, but with other professions that a lot of our teachers leave for, we want to raise teacher salaries and address their needs, and as long as all of our staff as well. So our goal, first and foremost, is to make sure we our teachers and staff are paid a more fair wage for the amazing work they're doing for our students around our district.
Would that make them make your district competitive almost right away?
Right. We're hoping if we pass the override to build that into the next year's budget, 26-27 school year budget. Mm-hmm. That's when the money will start coming to the district in the 26-27 school year.
And I understand the business community is beginning to line up in favor of this override.
Right. We're thrilled to have had the business community support of our bond for 2 years ago. And we're hoping we've already had some endorsements, and we're hoping to have more come in favor of our override. Because I think, you know, the business community knows that For Tucson to thrive, for our region to be successful, for us to draw in industries and jobs for the community, we need to have a thriving public school system. Mm-hmm. And of course, TUSD is where a plurality of our students, if not a supermajority of our students, get their education in our region. And we want to make sure that TUSD is successful and thriving, where most of the students get their education, so that our region can thrive and the business community understands that.
How about academics lately? How are you doing in the district?
You know, as we mentioned in the first segment, over half of our schools are A and B rated.
Right.
We are seeing enormous growth amongst our students in the post-COVID times as we catch up from all of that learning loss. And so I think we're doing some amazing work. And one of the goals with the override is to keep that momentum going. We're hoping to fund positions, the pull-out programs that are working with students that are struggling to help them get small group instruction and learning for math and English language acquisition. We're looking to maintain and expand our music and art programs, our physical education programs. You know, our students that are facing mental health crisis. They're not ready to learn. They're not learning. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping to maintain and expand our social workers and counselors if an override were to pass. So our hope is that the voters will approve an override and that we can keep these programs going that are going to address academic learning loss, that's going to really help our students learn and grow and be successful, both in terms of test taking, but as well as graduation rates and success, whether they go into the trades or they go to college in the future.
When I was in public school a million years ago, everybody had a librarian school and we always had a nurse. Could something like that or those positions come back?
Well, right. It depends on, you know, we wish we can do everything for every school. And believe you me, I wish my kids had, you know, every service and every resource available. You know, we have a limited budget. It's a finite budget. And we're hoping with the override that we can expand programs that we know are working for our students.
Mm-hmm. So where do you go from here? The infrastructure piece is looking pretty good, right? That's a 10-year program, right? That bond. And that money is being spent right now. You mentioned
correct.
Security, HVAC systems. So if you get this override, and I would be in favor of it myself, what will be the goal next for this district? Maybe a hard look at what schools, maybe consolidation.
I think we need to look at programs that are working, how we can expand those throughout our district, and really listen to parents and families and students. You know, what is working, what is not working, what they want to see in our district. How can we meet their needs and be more competitive from the charter schools and surrounding districts where we lose some students to make sure we bring students into the district, and for the students and families that are in our district, make sure that we're meeting their needs. So I think a lot of it's going to be looking and exploring with our families what is going on the ground from the 250 square miles of district territory that we have, and making sure that our schools are meeting the needs. You know, part of that, Bill, is that K-6 program that we've been piloting. We heard from a lot of families that, you know, that middle school experience in sixth grade is really challenging. And so we're experimenting. We've experimented now. This is our second year doing so with the K-6 model, a number of schools that has been fairly successful. Then our goal is to help improve enrollment. We lose a lot of kids in middle school. And work on academic achievement for our middle schoolers, where we really struggle. And so, you know, we're listening to families, and we're already putting new programs and services in place to pull out what actually makes a difference for our families.
Does your research show that at a particular point you get folks going over to the charter? Is it maybe in the middle school experience area, or is it younger kids?
Historically, we have lost a lot of students in middle school as they leave fifth grade. Some of them stay in TUSD, some of them don't, and we get a lot of them back in high school, because I think our high schools are fairly large and comprehensive and have a lot of programs and services that a lot of other people can't compete with. And so, you know, we're figuring out how to meet the needs in that, you know, middle school age, and also make sure that we're getting our services out to the early childhood too. If they stay with us, you know, kindergarten and beyond, they're hopefully going to stay with us throughout elementary school and beyond as well. And make sure, you know, I've been working with our communications department and others to make sure we're marketing our programs better. You know, I don't think most of your listeners know we have a K-8 Montessori school right by the U of A.
I didn't know that.
For those looking for a Montessori program that live in Midtown or go to U of A or in that area, and we have that program that we can have more capacity. We have a lot of amazing programs throughout our district. We have dual language programs, you know, throughout our district that are, you know, working out the Spanish. We have a program with Arabic in our Midtown and Wright Elementary School. We have a lot of amazing things that we're doing throughout our district that I don't think we toot our horn well enough to make sure families and parents know, and as they're picking schools. And, you know, and our hope, like I said earlier, my hope is that families give us a chance in TUSD. You know, TUSD has been amazing for my kids. I've seen them thrive and glow and learn and grow. My oldest through the music programs that she's involved with, you know, my kids through their amazing teachers and programs in elementary school. And I hope that your listeners and folks throughout Tucson take another look at TUSD. We're not the same district we were a decade plus ago. Our board is different than it was. Almost all of us are parents, and all of us choose TUSD for our own kids. And I think we're doing some amazing things throughout our district. You know, most of our majority of our schools are A and B rated. We're doing some great academic work throughout our district, and there's a lot of work still to be done. We're not anywhere close to being done. We're not hanging a victory sign. Mm-hmm. We want to keep the momentum going for success.
Is there concern among the immigrant families that there'll be an ICE raid on some of the schools? And I don't think there has been yet.
There hasn't been yet. That fear is definitely out there. Mm-hmm. And our district is very supportive to make sure that everyone here in Tucson, regardless of their immigration status or background, is getting access to education.
Dr. Shaw, got about a minute left. Any final thoughts for us?
I just want to say, as we talk about the override, we can't talk about that without talking about the things that we've done already. You know, we have a limited budget, like I mentioned. We've made over $8 million of cut going into this next year, focusing as much as we can away from the classrooms and away from our students to cut administrative and other spending throughout our district. So we're doing a lot as a district to make sure we're using taxpayer money effectively and doing the best we can for our students. And what we can't make up for all of the loss of funding from the state and federal government. And I hope that your listeners and folks around Tucson see the good work we're doing as a district, the transparency and open work we've done with the bond dollars that they approved 2 years ago. We have a very active bond oversight community and a lot of praise for the transparency and the work that we're doing on that front. And our hope is that the district voters here will see that and help make sure that we can stay competitive as a district from our sibling districts around Tucson and do the best we can with the students that really deserve better.
All right, Dr. Shaw, Ravi Shaw, the clerk of the board at the governing board of Tucson Unified. Good luck to you, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for having me.
All right, coming up, Will Humble will join us, the former Arizona health director. What about these NOVIDs? Why do some people not get COVID? There may be about 7 or 8% that will not get it. We'll talk with Will about that.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Sad note today, jazz musician Chuck Mangione. You're listening to his terrific music right there, a little bump music. Dead at the age of 84, had a great career. All right, the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. So far, all the Green Things are happy. They've been breathing sighs of relief because we have gotten a little bit of rain. Not as much as we need, certainly, but check it out. Green Things, all of your gardening needs will be taken care of over there, a 13-acre site, also home to Zocalo Village and that great imported merchandise from really all over the world. They've got the largest collection of pottery in Arizona there at Zocalo Village, so check that out as well. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are your websites. When we do our telephone interviews, and we've got one coming up here momentarily, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our Friday Focus interview tomorrow will be with Pima County Attorney Laura Conover, my media co-host tomorrow, Jim Nintzel of TucsonSentinel.com will be joining me. Well, it's been 5.5 years after the world shut down in response to the rapid spread of a mysterious disease. The total number of reported cases of COVID-19 worldwide, get this, 800 million. That's roughly the equivalent of the entire population of Europe. That's about 10,000 new cases still being reported every day. Somehow, in the midst of all this, are the Novids, the so-called super dodgers, the people who never get COVID for what reason, one reason or another, and it's estimated that that's maybe 8 to 10% of the population apparently immune to COVID. Let's go now on the live line for his monthly visit. Will Humble is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He's the former director of the Arizona Health Department. He is the Buckmaster Show contributor on public health. Will, how are you, sir?
Good afternoon. Doing just fine. How about you? You're recovered, aren't you?
I am recovered.
Better.
And I had kind of a breakthrough case because did the vaccine in April and then came down with COVID about 12 days ago and then tested negative, luckily, in about 6 days after that. That was my second visit down COVID lane. But you know them. I know them. I just had a guest here with me in studio, Dr. Ravi Shah of the TUSD Governing Board. I said, Dr. Shah, are you one of these Novids? And he said, yeah, never had COVID. What's going on, Will?
Well, the story you just told is most likely that he has been infected with COVID, but he had an asymptomatic case.
Okay.
So you could say, I've never had COVID.
Yeah.
Well, that's different from like a clinical assessment to say, hey, this person was exposed and, and has never seroconverted or shown antibodies to COVID-19. So most likely, there's a lot of people who say they've never had COVID that have, but they just didn't have symptoms and didn't test. Mm-hmm. And so they don't think they had it. So anytime people ask me, well, now I've had COVID once, but when people used to ask me, have you had COVID? I always say, not that I know of. I don't say no.
Right.
But that's one category. But then there also is a small fraction of the population where they get exposed over and over again and actually don't get COVID-19 and also don't seroconvert. In other words, you don't see the antibodies to COVID-19 in their bloodstream. And also they don't, when they're exposed even in a hospital setting to really sick patients, they simply don't seroconvert. There's 3 or 4 different categories of people. I don't know how deeply you want to go into this one, but some of it has to do with people who have a mutation on something called a CCR5 gene, which a natural mutation that they have in their genetic code that it makes it more likely that they could be serially exposed and then still not seroconvert or get symptomatic. Other people just have a really active immune system and fight it off really quickly. And then there's other people who have what's called T-cell cross-reactivity immunity, meaning they've been infected with a similar virus, which gives them T-cell immunity to COVID-19, which is different from antibody immunity. But you need to have an immunology professor on
right.
the show to go into more detail with that.
Yeah, I'd rather go down now the lane of what is happening for those of us who have picked up this. There's two dominant strains right now, and I guess they're all from the Omicron family tree, right, that are going around. And there's been a significant uptick of cases around the country, Will Humble.
Yeah, and if you remember, we, even in Arizona and nationally, there's usually two bumps in infections on six-month intervals. One is around the holidays, you know, from Thanksgiving into January, and then another smaller bump in infections, usually in midsummer.
Mm-hmm.
And you can remember back to the summer of 2020 in Arizona, it was terrible. I mean, the hospitals were absolutely full.
Sure.
We were on crisis standards of care that year.
Mm-hmm.
In that summer wave. So there's always been two waves of infections, usually midwinter and midsummer. Part of the reason for that, by the way, is when you get a COVID infection, you have an antibody response that protects you for about 7 months from a reinfection. And so if you're on a six-month cycle, more and more people become susceptible, you know, after 6 months from the previous wave.
Hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason for that midsummer blip increase. I don't know what you want to call it.
Right.
Surge is probably too big a word.
Mm-hmm.
But winter and summer are the two real infection periods.
Do you get a boost? You said 7 months generally. What about those like myself that had a shot, and I guess I would be considered even a breakthrough case if it's within 3 months? Do you get a little extra boost then?
Yeah, that's right. So your infection that you just had will protect, what is this? We're in late July.
Yes.
That'll protect you up until after Thanksgiving, probably, with immunity against the protein coat of this Omicron variant, whichever one you were exposed to. And then also there are other combination of antibodies that provide some additional protection. So that infection, you can think of it as a vaccine that you got, because it is going to protect you up probably past Thanksgiving.
All right. And again, these two variants, they're not necessarily sending people to the hospital, but you can still be very sick with the Nimbus and the Stratus is what they're commonly being called. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just those nicknames that people created because people get tired of saying, and, you know, KPP, JN1, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been making up nicknames for them. But they're both, as you said, in the Omicron family, which has really been dominant since 2021. And anyway, so that's where we are. Those two strains are what's been circulating.
All right.
About 43% of them are in the one, I think it's the Nimbus.
Really? Which is the one that causes the razor throat? Thank goodness I wasn't in that category.
Yeah, I'm not sure which, but honestly, I've looked into that, Bill.
Yeah.
And that razor word that they keep using, yes, it caused a stronger sore throat, but I couldn't find any evidence to support the kind of dramatic language that has been reported by, that started, some journalist wrote that and it kind of took off.
Yeah, it's really scary.
That word, razor blade.
Scary.
Yeah, it's scarier than it probably.
All right. I want to pick up with you, Will, in segment number four about you guys have weighed in at the Arizona Public Health Association on the hottest topic right now here in Tucson, and those are the new data center proposals. We'll pick up on that with Will Humble as we continue on the Buckmaster Show. Our Thursday edition, we'll be right back.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, mid-80s over in Silver City. How do you beat that? This time of year, mile high elevation being 5,500 to about 7,000 feet. Bottom line, cooler, certainly cooler days and delightful nights. About a three-hour drive east of Tucson, hit I-10. Then a left at Lordsburg and then up the mountain to Silver City. You're going to have a great time. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Our public health contributor is the former director of the Arizona State Health Department, Will Humble, who is the Arizona Public Health Association Executive Director, and he's on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. You sent, on behalf of the Arizona Public Health Association, Will, a letter to the mayor of the city of Tucson concerning these new data centers proposed for Tucson. What can you tell us about that letter?
Yeah, so I first read about it down in the Star, you know, your Arizona Star down there, the newspaper, about this proposal and how it was being discussed, or, you know, with the city council. And I wanted to weigh in because, you know, one of the things that I think has been neglected in terms of public health policy is, you know, the ways that lower income people have their money siphoned off by electrical companies. When you look at low income families in Arizona, their biggest expense on a month to month basis is rent, of course, and affordable housing. The lack of affordable housing is a big problem there. But ahead of food is electricity. So for low-income families, it's the number two expense that they have. And my concern with the Blue Zones project was that I wrote a letter urging the mayor and the council to make sure they do an independent assessment of what these data centers would do to residential utility rates, ordinary ratepayers down there in the Tucson area. Because a lot of the information, my impression was that a lot of the information the council is getting is from the companies themselves, either the utility itself or the companies that want to build these data centers and their contractors. And of course, they're going to frame, you know, what they're going to frame things in a certain way to get a favorable result from the council. My letter just urges the council to do an independent assessment among people who don't have conflicts of interest to really dive into the details of what could potentially happen to residential utility rates down there in Tucson. My fear being that as these huge data centers come in with all the energy that they suck up, that Tucson Electric Power will end up asking for another rate. As you know, they just put in for a 14% rate increase, and they're going to keep putting those rate increases and make the residential customers subsidize the capital expenses and so forth that is required to meet the energy demand of these two big data centers. So I know a lot of the discussion down there in Tucson's been about the water. I wanted to make sure to raise up this issue about utility prices, because it really does have a huge impact on what a family can afford in terms of, you know, healthier foods, school supplies for their kids, transportation to get to work, the ability to pay for preschool and childcare, that kind of thing.
One of the last things that Joe Biden, one of his last acts, was to sign a proclamation basically posing, saying there are risks to public health from these data centers. It was a concern that the White House acknowledged for the first time. And some folks have talked about health impacts up there where you are, up in the Valley of the Sun in the Phoenix area, where there are a bunch of these data centers. And some of them, they all use this program here in Project Blue would have backup generators that use a lot of power. What are you concerned about health impacts?
Yeah. I mean, sure, certainly air quality is a factor, and you're probably talking about natural methane power plants as backup. Mm-hmm. And so air quality is a factor. But my bigger concern is the stress that these incessantly increasing utility costs have on low-income families and the bad health effects that results in. The stress of the financial stress that families have, in addition to the ability, like I talked about, to, you know, for around transportation and childcare and just pressure on all those other parts of their family budget. So I'm concerned about the air quality part of it, but my bigger concern is that there won't be enough due diligence on the expense side of the ledger in terms of who's going to actually pay for all this infrastructure that the data centers are going to need to get all those electrons into those plants. And my fear is that, you know, in the end, it's going to be residential, ordinary Tucsonians who are going to get popped for this bill. And I'll just be honest with you, Bill, you know, I don't have the confidence that the Arizona Corporation Commission is going to push back on any of these rate increases. Mm-hmm. And so you build a bunch of data centers and you get a plan in place that makes residential customers subsidize the infrastructure, there's going to be rate increases. And I don't believe the current Corporation Commission is going to do anything about it. And then low-income people are even in bigger stress and, you know, living in houses, they're putting their thermostat at 84 and stuff, you know?
Yeah, and it is a concern. People have up in the valley have voiced health concerns about the air pollution. Some even complained there was some kind of a noise issue going when these giant backup machines were working.
So. Yeah, no, they're all over the place up here in the valley. We've got our big utilities, our APS and Salt River Project. And as you know, APS just put in for a 14% increase, just like TEP did.
Wow.
So and that's on top of an 8% increase that they got a couple of years ago. Mm. So, you know, this trend for increasing electricity prices is really is a real problem. And it obviously, there's more people that are, let me just say this. I think people are more civically involved in Tucson than they are up here in the Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw the public meeting that on the Blue Project
last night.
A couple days ago.
It was last night. Last night. Overflow
last
crowd.
Night,
overflow crowd. I watched that on YouTube. Place was jammed. Over 400 people. I think they're having another public meeting next week. I don't know the location. But, boy, I'll tell you, Tucson is very much tuned in to this, Will Humble.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that's not the case up here in Phoenix.
Okay,
I'm just telling you. People are like, meh, whatever.
One of your favorite...
I don't know, it's just two different cultures.
One of your favorite topics, RFK Jr., what's he up to that now?
One of the things that I was most disturbed about last week was an order that he instructed his agencies to make sure that... you've heard of the Head Start program. It's a really successful program in getting kids school ready. He made a proclamation that once they finish their rulemaking at the Health and Human Services, that kids who have immigration statuses that aren't solid gold are not going to be able to participate in Head Start programs. And of course, that's bad for school readiness for those kids, but it's also going to end up cutting and ending some neighborhood Head Start programs, because the way the Fed structure works in terms of paying for Head Start, that you got to have you need to have certain number of kids enrolled in order for that funding to come through. And if you lose a bunch of your kids from your Head Start program because of their immigration status, they're just going to have to close that whole Head Start school, and the families who are relying on that are going to have to find a different Head Start that does have enough participants in it to keep going. That was one thing. Another thing is he made a proclamation that once he's finished with his rulemaking, persons other than citizens and others with like green card status, et cetera, won't be able to go to a community health center for like El Rio, for example, and get basic healthcare treatment. Now, we don't know exactly how that's going to look because the secretary hasn't released the regulation yet, but that is his stated intent, is to stop folks from accessing community health centers who have questionable immigration status. And what that does is send those people, they can't get treatment for things early, so it spirals out of control, gets worse, and then they end up in an emergency department, which is the very most expensive place for people to get care. So not only is it bad on just a humanitarian level, but it's bad in a cost level, too, because the Secretary Kennedy cannot keep people with questionable immigration status out of hospital care. That's a separate law that he can't undo. So those were the two biggest things from last week that I thought were not just bad policy, but in my opinion, cruel.
Could that law be changed that would keep immigrants out of even emergency rooms?
That's a law called EMTALA, and I can't tell you what the acronym stands for.
Okay.
But it's been in place for decades in the U.S., and what it says is that no matter who shows up in an emergency department, the emergency department is required to provide care and stabilize that patient. Now, if they show up with cancer, they're not required to, you know, provide the cancer treatment, chemotherapy, and stuff like that, but they are required to stabilize the patient.
Okay.
And that's one of the risks. We could probably talk about it another show. I think we're
all
out
right
of time, but
let's do.
That's the biggest risk.
Let's do. Will Humble, always a pleasure. Thanks, Will. Take care.
All right.
All right. Coming up tomorrow, Laura Conover, the Pima County attorney, and Jim Nintzel will be with me on our Friday Focus interview. But right now, we need to say goodbye. We'll be back in about 23 hours. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.